Something from this morning's class. Our bodies are mostly earth. And they come from the earth and they go back into the earth. And yet we're so attached to something that is inevitably so doomed. And therefore, obviously, if someone is attached to something that's doomed, he's going to suffer. Anyone remember anything else? Yes.
Pride is like a snake which bites our vision.
Like
a snake that bites our understanding and vision.
Yes. In what sense? it stops us from being able to see pride. And pride is embodied in the false ego. And false ego is basically a manifestation of envy of Krishna or aversion to Krishna. So therefore we could say that our aversion to Krishna stops us from seeing things as they are. Yes, that was the process, wasn't it? Did you want to say something, Rule? But you have to say it a little louder. This use his
his carriers.
Yes.
And thinking it's like doing welfare for the nation.
Yes. So it's interesting how again the seed of that chapter 12, is with that verse of Rishabhdev Maharaj, perhaps the fifth verse in his teachings in the fifth chapter, where he says, this really moves into the chapter we're going to speak about today or this afternoon, that the happiness, the Krishna gives us our bodies. No? Yes, the fifth verse. Until one has love for Vasudev, who is none other than myself, he's certainly not delivered from having to accept a material body again and again. But before that, when a living entity is covered by the mode of ignorance, ignorance basically means forgetting our relationship with Krishna. So when our consciousness is covered by false ego, we don't understand the individual living being, this is text 6 in the 5th chapter, and the supreme being. We don't understand our relationship, we don't understand who we are, we don't understand who Krishna is, we don't understand our relationship. And the result of that is the mind becomes subjugated to fruitive activities. It becomes colored by so many fruitive activities. And that covering is that which fills, or I think of it as a coloring even, just like if you have water which is essentially clear and transparent, swacha. Like consciousness described in by Kapila Muni, it's originally swacha, but then the modes of material nature, swachatam, I think the verse is, the modes of material nature provide different colors, different varieties of red and blue and yellow, which color everything in our consciousness, and we see only in that way. Well, consciousness becomes covered by the modes, and the only cure for this, as he says, is love for Krishna. But yet, there's such an interesting and in some ways difficult sequence in that 12th chapter before going on to the 3rd chapter. The 3rd chapter, really, the 13th chapter will show the results, as will the 14th chapter and the 15th chapter. It shows the results of this coloring, and the results in one word is suffering. Our desire is pleasure, and the result is suffering. And until the consciousness is made again clear by the process that Rishabhdev Maharaj speaks of in that 6th chapter, by love for Vasudev, priti na yavan mai Vasudeve, that enlivens the consciousness And then it fills it with the vision, the Sambit Chit Shakti also, and the Ladini Shakti, by which we see things truly, accurately as we are capable of. Actually, because we are tiny and insignificant, we can never see reality. We can never understand reality because we are tiny. Only Krishna has the capacity to understand reality. This is because he's Sarvajna, he knows everything. So we get one little part of reality, the part that fills our consciousness, and we think that part is reality, the totality of reality, and that's called illusion, to think we know everything when we only know so little is illusion. The great scientists of the world, they understand this, that they know so little of reality. The poor, lower class scientists and mediocre scientists, they become proud. The great scientists are humble. The mediocre scientists become proud and they think they know so much. So we have to be careful about that also. Obviously. Because that will lead to pride, which will cover our vision. So in the instructions that in chapter 10, again those questions that Rahugana Maharaj asks in 21 through 23, he asks the question that's going to be at the center of the next chapter. He says, "You have said, I am not fatigued from labor." This is such an amazing conception. If we think about the way that we usually view reality, you have said, because this is what the first chastisement of Jad Bharat to Rahugana was, that you're calling me so many things, but you don't understand reality. And part of the things he said is you are not fatigued from labor. He was sarcastically speaking to him. So he said. So he asks. Rahugana says, although the soul is different from the body, there is fatigue because of bodily labor. And we all experience this. We work hard and we become tired. To say that the tiredness has nothing to do with me, I accept I'm a soul, but the tiredness has nothing to do with me, it's not at all what I experience. The happiness I feel, the sadness I feel, doesn't have anything to do with me. It's not at all what I experience. So he's asking about this. How do you expect me to believe this? When you are carrying the palanquin, there's certainly labor for the soul. I'm experiencing, even though it's illusion, but I'm experiencing this working hard. So he's going to ask specifically about these questions again. And Jad Bharat had answered these inquiries by saying, yes, he is sticking to this higher platform of knowledge that there is no relationship between the soul and the body. It is only illusion. This has been described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam as well. Atma mayam rite rajan parasyanun bhavatmana nagate tarta sambhavas swapna jastami va iha. That it's swapna, it's a dream. But this is a dream it's more real than the spiritual world to the conditioned soul. So what a difficult position we're actually in. So he's asking about this. And what was Bharat Maharaj's reply? He said, this is all the mind. This is all sitting in the mind, which is basically what Rishabhdev Maharaj said, the mind colored by the modes of material nature and these fruit of desires. It's just holding on tightly to the material world, although it has nothing to do with the material world. Consciousness must be cleansed. So in this chapter, in chapter 14, excuse me, the chapter 12, that we went over, did you get a feel for the continuity of that chapter? Because I found it somewhat difficult when I first.
So it answers the question. It answers the question: what is the ultimate truth? What is the basis of the ultimate reality? How to advance?
That's quite wonderful. I find that very helpful. Yeah, he asked previously about the secure shelter, and that secure shelter is the Advaita Gyan. And remember the last time we had class, I pointed out how he was a devotee. He was holding on to the lotus feet of the Lord. And also he said that, as Rishabhdev Maharaj said, that the cure of the disease is love for Vasudev. But a lot of the things he says are going to sound quite impersonal. You know, even the speaking about how this world has no reality, it's just an illusion, it's a dream. This is what the impersonalists say. So the impersonalists, when they hear this, they become attracted to the teachings. Oh, here's someone who actually understands the truth, not just a sentimentalist. And then they get caught in the web of bhakti of Srila Vyasadeva in this way, and Jada Bharat. So perhaps we won't go over the whole chapter, that chapter, because you've already done that. And he explains right at the end of the chapter, which did you find the key verse in this chapter? Huh? Yes, and the one before that was the, yeah. The 12 is Vina Mahatpada Rajo Bhisheka, and 11 is a verse quite similar to the verse spoken by whom? Satvam Vasudam Vasudeva Sabdita. So Gyanam Vasudam Paramartamekam Anantam Tva Abhi Brahma Satyam. Talking about Brahma, understanding Brahma. What is the ultimate truth? That's the actual shelter. If we don't take shelter of the ultimate truth, we will take shelter of relative truths. And if we take shelter of relative truth, that means it's sometimes true and it's sometimes not true. And if we take some shelter of something that is sometimes true and sometimes not true, we will not find it very, very secure. Because it's there for some time and not there at other times. So it won't be secure for us. So therefore, his question of what is the secure shelter is really a question about the absolute truth. And it's very pertinent. But before he speaks, he tells the process about the dust, bathing oneself with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord, Lord's devotees. But then he talks about his own mishap and how he became entangled in the material world, how he became attached to a deer. Now this is a coloring of the consciousness that we heard of in the fifth chapter, by the fruit of activities, by the modes, attachment, which mode of material nature is attachment born from? Passion. So even though he was so situated in the mode of goodness, so purified, there's always this danger. Unless one is really, really fully transcendental, there is danger of the material modes coming and us getting entangled in them. And now, what was the result of his doing that? His getting entangled as a deer, attached to that. What was the result? He got the body of a deer. And then the next result, he became so detached. So what caused him to be detached? An obstacle caused him to be detached. So obstacles can have a positive effect. Suffering can have a positive effect if we become conscious of them as obstacles and if we become determined. Suffering in and of itself, no one becomes spiritually advanced simply by suffering. There's no benefit in suffering. Otherwise, the worms and the monkeys, do they suffer? Oh, is anyone a monkey watcher? Well, because I live in a cage, so I get They get to see me, I get to see them all the time. But oh, they suffer so much. And sometimes you look at their faces and it's just the most intense suffering. And they're fighting or sleeping or looking for food or up to other monkey business. And it's just suffering and it's so hot. Can you imagine wearing a fur coat in this weather? A thick fur coat with the weather like this, and everywhere you go, at least everywhere more or less, people try to chase you away and throw rocks at you. And then they bring a langur at the MVT to chase you away, and you get, oh, just suffering. This, you get used to, this is my territory of my family, and then one langur comes in, and your whole life is ruined. You have to wander somewhere else. But I've seen also one good quality of monkeys, and that they don't remain angry for very long. They forget their anger. You know, you can fight with them or throw something, and they really get angry. Put the ears out like that. But then it goes away and it's over for them. So in that sense, they're better than humans. Because humans tend to hold their anger long. And what is that old Arab saying that about revenge is best, is a dish best served cold. After some time, you get your revenge and it's better. So monkeys superior in that sense. They forget it and go on with their miserable lives. So deers, monkeys, animals, humans, this, that, so much suffering. So Jad Bharat is preparing us for the next chapter, the one we shall read right now, by talking about his deer situation, because we see that that he became very determined not to make the mistakes again, which of course is very intelligent. And also it describes sincere service and being afraid of bad materialistic association. I wander alone, unnoticed by others. He actually fears it. Why does he fear it? But answer really in a down-to-earth practical way. Yes. Why does he fear it?
Because even if someone is liberated and can control mind, mind is still like a wild animal.
But why does he fear it? He doesn't want to suffer anymore. Keep that in mind as we read the next chapter, which we shall begin right now. So the first verse, he says, Jad Bharat, who had fully realized Brahman, continued, "My dear King Rahugana, the living entity wanders on the path of the material world, which is very difficult for him to traverse." Now there's going to be a bigger explanation of this in the next chapter. And the next chapter, 14, is really long. That's the longest of these. And then it's still more it's funny how the 14th chapter, what's the title of the 14th chapter? The Forest of Enjoyment. And you can imagine the great pleasure that goes on in the Forest of Enjoyment. It's the forest of suffering. My dear King Rahugana, the living entity wanders on the path of the material world, which is very difficult for him to traverse. And he accepts repeated birth and death, being captivated by the material world under the influence of the three modes of material nature. As we try to capture something for our enjoyment, that's Sarasat Guna Sangha Sa, but we try to capture something to the Purusha, acting as Purusha, we try to capture something to enjoy it, and we get caught by that process of our trying to capture something which we deem enjoyable. We get caught by the material energy. The influence, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, sattva-guna, rajagun, and tamagun, the living entity can see only the three fruits of activities under the spell of material nature. Just as Adi Purusha Prabhu said, due to our pride, thinking we can enjoy, our vision is stolen away. So we don't see reality. We don't even see a great portion of reality. We just see the vision awarded to us by the three modes of material nature, auspicious, inauspicious, and mixed. He thus, the wandering living entity, becomes attached to religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the monistic theory of liberation, merging with the Supreme. He works very hard, day and night, exactly like a merchant. And here's the example that we shall hear expanded. He works like a merchant who enters a forest to acquire some articles to sell later for a profit. So why does he enter the forest? He wants to gain something that will give him something. Profit means the ability to enjoy, fruitive work. So he enters the forest to gain something that is going to ultimately cause his pleasure. However, he cannot really achieve happiness within this material world. What did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say? Wait. Who remember? Because I've mentioned the quotation a few times. Raise your hand if you remember it. Yes. Wait a second. He said so many things, that's true. But I didn't say that one. Unless there's a translation that Maya's trick. Yes, but that's, yes, thank you. If one actually understands, has reached the conclusion that you can't become happy in this world no matter what you do, then taking the greatest step forward in self-realization. So the forest, the man, the merchant enters the forest, he's going there for the idea of profit. And he wouldn't enter, or his mood would be different when in the forest if he deeply understood this, the reality of the situation. Prabhupada's purport: one can very easily understand how difficult and insurmountable the path of sense gratification is. Not knowing what the path of sense gratification is, one becomes implicated in the repetition of birth and accepts different types of bodies again and again. Thus one suffers in material existence. In this life, one may think he's very happy being an American, an Indian, Englishman, or German. But in the next life, one has to accept another body amongst the 8,400,000 species. The next body has to be immediately accepted according to karma. One will be forced to accept a certain type of body, and protesting will not help. When I was in the 60s, it was the era of protesting, and in New York on the subways, I said this one before, someone had written, as they write their graffiti with the Kansas spray paint, someone had written, "Abolish compulsory reincarnation." They're abolishing this, abolish the draft, but abolish compulsory reincarnation. It was a joke, but it was a real New York sense of humor joke. But it's forced. We may want to abolish it, but it's forced. And protesting will not help. That is the stringent law of nature. Stringent means what? Strict, huh? Unbreakable, strict Yes, unavoidable. You cannot avoid this. Due to the living entity's ignorance of the eternal bliss, his eternal blissful life, he becomes attracted to material activity under the spell of Maya, illusion. In this world, he can never experience happiness. Yet he works very hard to do so. This is called Maya. So again, Rahugana, in 5.12.2, in the second verse of the 12th chapter, he asks, "My body is filled with dirty things," he says, "and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. Your nectarian instructions are the proper medicine for one suffering from such a fever, and they are cooling waters for one scorched by the heat." Now, the medicine that we're going to take now, by hearing about what happens when they enter the forest, he's calling nectarian. It's sweet, but it is bitter also. It is extremely bitter, but yet it is the proper medicine for one suffering from the disease of the attempt, the fever of attempting to enjoy the material world. It is bitter. Bitter medicine is sometimes required, but we really do want to become convinced about the very nature of the forest of material enjoyment. So going back, O King Rahugana, in this forest of material existence, because he's asked him to speak the medicine, and here it comes. There are six very powerful plunderers, like thieves. When you're in the forest, you're in a dangerous position, and there are plunderers there. When the conditioned soul enters the forest to acquire some material gain, the six plunderers misguide him. Thus, the conditioned merchant does not know how to spend his money, and it is taken away by these plunderers. Like tigers, jackals, and other ferocious animals in a forest that are ready to take away a lamb from the custody of its protector, the wife and children enter the heart of the merchant and plunder him in so many ways. So there's one lecture where Prabhupada says that if you're walking down a street and someone puts their hand in your pocket and takes out your wallet and starts taking your money, you'll immediately call the police and the person will be arrested, etc. But if the wife or children do that, Prabhupada explains in the lecture, he says, the man will think, oh, this is so cute. How nice. So plundered. So Prabhupada is going to be relentless in speaking about materialistic life here. That which we're attached to, that which we tend to be attached to, he is going to cut for the purpose of giving us the proper intelligence to make our strong attempt to remove, to not at least cultivate the different contaminations that may sit in our consciousness. Because this causes repeated birth and death. And it stops us from developing love for Vasudeva, for Krishna. In this forest there are dense bowers composed of thickets of bushes, grass and creepers. In these bowers the conditioned soul is always disturbed by cruelly biting mosquitoes, which are envious people. Sometimes he sees an imaginary palace in the forest, and sometimes he is bewildered by seeing a fleeting fiend or ghost which appears like a meteor in the sky. Purport. The material household is actually a whole of fruitive activities. What does fruitive activity mean specifically?
Sexual
Excuse me?
What's in for me?
Actions that are meant. There's no pleasure in the action itself, but they're meant to gain something, some fruit so I can enjoy. Like when one plants an apple tree or a mango tree, there's so much work that actually goes on to make to nurture and cultivate the mango tree. So there's not pleasure in that work. The farmer who does that, who plants the grove, isn't interested in the work. He's interested in the mangoes that come out. So fruitive means working hard to gain something for enjoyment. To earn livelihood, one engages in different industries and trades. Sometimes one performs great sacrifices to go to higher planetary systems. Apart from this, at least everyone is engaged in earning a livelihood in some profession or occupation. In these dealings, one has to meet many undesirable people, and their behavior is compared to the biting of mosquitoes. This creates very undesirable conditions. Even in the midst of these disturbances, one imagines that he's going to construct a grand house and live there permanently, although he knows that he cannot. Gold is compared to a quickly fleeting fiend, which appears like a meteor in the sky. It displays itself for a moment and it is then gone. Generally, karmis are attracted to gold or money, but these are compared herein to ghosts and witches. They actually harass one. The desire for these things harass and give so much trouble. You see this in Australia, that the dream that they've put in the Australian mind, the Australian psyche, is that every person should have their own house. This is the dream of every Australian. And then they have it also, because this is the way they manipulate the people to go out and make money and be striving their whole lives. And they talk about your first house, because one is supposed to expect it to upgrade his house every 5 or 6 years, because your first house is just for you when you just get married. And or something, of course, they don't get married nowadays. That's pretty old-fashioned. I even know one struggling soul who he was working and he had what they previously you would call a girlfriend, but then they called a partner. So they were not married, but staying together. And this is so because. And they both work, right? And they both contribute. They hope they're going to stay together, and they both contribute to the house. They buy a house because they're so expensive that one person can't afford it. So they both contribute for the house. And I shouldn't laugh because it's so sad, because I have affection for this person. But after he had put $50,000 in the house, they broke up and she took the whole thing. She kicked him out and took the whole thing. Because he figured, because he's a soft-hearted person, if they got a court over it, he was going to lose it anyway. She might as well have it. And then he started living with some friends after. Very upset and frustrated and everything. And then eventually he moved back into the house. This is true. And she charged him $600 a week rent. Well, of course there's the foolish people who do things like this. But oh. Oh. True story. And $600 a week is quite exorbitant too. My dear king, So everyone has this dream about the perfect house, and I'll have it with my loving family members will be there. And now all the loving family members have their own. They're all on internet separately, chatting with different people, and no one talks to each other. And oh, and their own video sets, and their own this, and their own that. Oh, the dream is so wonderful. But like any dream, except for great spiritual dreams, there is no reality to it at all. So people follow their dream their whole life. And then at the end, they're dying. And all has been lost. My dear king, the merchant on the forest, so he's criticizing him because he's thinking he's a king. He's looking at it from the point of view of I have to elevate my citizens. And Judd Bharat is looking at it from the point of view of you're a soul so illusioned that you're thinking of a king and you're involved in so many pious and impious activities and you're going to suffer. You're trying to enjoy and you're suffering and your future is worse. The merchant in the forest of the material world, his intelligence is victimized by home, wealth, relatives. How are we victimized by wealth? Wealth is what everyone wants. How are we victimized by wealth? You didn't raise your hand, but anyway, I'm calling on you.
The more one has, the more one wants. It's not satisfied because he has a certain amount of money.
And?
As soon as you have money, somebody wants to pay you.
And you're in so much anxiety. Money causes so much anxiety, actually. What a thing. Victimized by home, wealth, relatives, and so forth, he runs from one place to another in search of success. Sometimes his eyes are covered by the dust of a whirlwind. That is to say, in his lust, he is captivated by the beauty of his wife, especially during her menstrual period. Thus his eyes are blinded and he cannot see where to go or what he is doing. Purport. It is said that household attraction resides in the wife because sex is the center of household life. Yan matuninari griha meri sukham hitucham. Rishabhdev Maharaj, again, these teachings are the teachings of Rishabhdev Maharaj because he taught them to Bharat Maharaj and Bharat Maharaj became Jada Bharat. A materialistic person making his wife the center of attraction works very hard day and night. His only enjoyment in material life is sexual intercourse. Therefore, karmis are attracted to women as friends or wives. Indeed, they cannot work without sex. Just in the there was some internet news that 1 in 25 men, they did a survey, I can't remember which country, which Western country, they're bringing up children that they didn't know, that they don't know they are not the father of. 1 in 25 nowadays. They don't know it, but they are not the father of those children. So, we know what that means. So this is Kali Yuga. So all the suffering of Kali Yuga is intensified. And there is such a great blessing of the suffering that Kali Yuga gives. The anxieties that Kali Yuga gives is that there is a shelter in the holy names to hold on to very tightly. And the material world, Kali will force us to that shelter. It will force us. Of course, we have to do our part and hold on. So one becomes blind and enamored by these intense desires for enjoyment with a member of the opposite sex. Wandering in the forest of the material world, the conditioned soul sometimes hears an invisible cricket making harsh sounds, and his ears become very much aggrieved. Sometimes its heart is pained by the sounds of owls, which are just like the harsh words of his enemies. especially behind his back. Sometimes he takes shelter of a tree that has no fruits or flowers. He approaches such a tree due to his strong appetite, and thus he suffers. He would like to acquire water, but he is simply illusioned by a mirage and he runs after it. So he's running and running from here to there, trying to find his happiness. Purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that the Bhagavata philosophy is meant for people who are completely free from envy. Paramo nirmatsaranam. The material world is full of envious people. Even within one's inner circle, there is much backbiting. Even in a spiritual society, there is so much fighting. A society whose purposes are so noble and ideal. And this is compared to the sound vibration of a cricket in the forest. One cannot see the cricket, but one hears its sounds and thus becomes aggrieved. When one takes to Krishna consciousness, one always hears unpalatable words from relatives. That is the nature of the world. One cannot avoid mental distress due to the backbiting of envious people. As soon as you turn your back, the bite is there. People criticize. There's no one who can avoid this. Whatever you do, people will criticize. And the only way to avoid people criticizing what you do is to do nothing. And then people will criticize you for doing nothing. You see, he doesn't even do anything. But it's just the way the world is. Because the world is so designed to push us to Krishna's holy names for shelter. But for shelter, to take deep shelter, not just to chant while reading the newspaper of our mind, not that kind of chanting, but for shelter, taking shelter of Krishna's holy names. Namasraya kori jatana tumi. Being very much aggrieved, sometimes one goes to a sinful person for help, but he has no means to help because he has no intelligence. Thence the living entity is disappointed. This is like running after a mirage in the desert in an effort to find water. Such activities do not produce any tangible result. Due to being directed by the illusory energy, a conditioned soul suffers in so many ways. Sometimes the conditioned soul jumps into a shallow river, or being short of food grains, he goes to beg food from people who are not at all charitable. Sometimes he suffers from the burning heat of household life, which is like a forest fire. And sometimes he becomes sad to have his wealth, which is as dear as his life, plundered by kings in the name of heavy income tax. So the governments continuously plot ways to get the money from the citizens through taxation. They are so ingenious in doing this. The Vedic system was simple and strict, 25% of income. And then the modern days, they have the graduated income tax, where the more you make, the more they can take. Just so many different methods of cheating to take everyone's money. When one is hot due to the scorching sun, one sometimes jumps into a river to gain relief. However, if the river is almost dried up and the water is too shallow, one may break his bones by jumping in. Sometimes his efforts to get help from friends are exactly like jumping into a dry river. By such actions, he does not derive any benefit. He only breaks his bones. Sometimes suffering from a shortage of food, one may go to a person who is neither able to give charity nor willing to do so. Sometimes one is stationed in household life, which is compared to a forest fire. Samsara dhava nalalila loka. When a man is heavily taxed by the government, he becomes very sad. Heavy taxation obliges one to hide his income. But despite his endeavor, the government agents are often so vigilant and strong, they take all the money anyway, and the conditioned soul becomes very aggrieved. Thus, people are trying to become happy within the... So what is the effect of all this, all these kind of words and preaching by Jada Bharat? What is the effect supposed to be? And Prabhupada's purports. But what is the effect supposed to be when we hear and read this? Mother Sharana.
I guess detachment,
yes. We're supposed to get more and more detached and more fearful about entering into these type of things, knowing the result is going to be miserable. So what's the alternative? What is, first of all, again, what's the cause of him entering the forest? A desire to enjoy. So what is the alternative? We may have to perform so many activities, but if we go in there with those activities, with the fruit of mentality, we will suffer by the mercy of the material energy. So it is not as much a condemnation of activity, any particular activity, but it's a condemnation of the uselessness of the fruitive mentality. Because remember that Jada Bharat has so strongly made the point, as Rishabhdev Maharaj, or did in the early Rishabhdev Maharaj, that the problem is in the mind, it's not in the activities. So based on the mind, one performs these kind of fruitive activities and the result is utter misery. So then, one can decide he's not going to perform any activities anymore, but that's not the... it's missing the point. The point is to clean the consciousness, because when the consciousness is colored in these ways, one has to force to take these repeated births and deaths. So therefore, cheto darpana marjanam, cleaning the consciousness of these tendencies, the fruit of tendencies, the self-centered tendencies. Sometimes, being defeated or plundered by a superior, powerful agent, a living entity loses all his possessions. He then becomes very morose, and lamenting their loss, he sometimes becomes unconscious. Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city in which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches, like Paranjana, as we read in the fourth canto. He thinks himself fully satisfied if this is possible, but such so-called happiness continues only for a moment. And Prabhupada, in his purport, he speaks very much like Paranjana. The laws of material nature kick us out of our castles that we spend our life constructing. And the ultimate castle is the body. And Prabhupada explains that even if we fulfill all our desires in the material world, it is still like drops of water in the desert. What use will drops of water in the desert do when we need an ocean of water to make the desert fertile? Sometimes the merchant goes to the forest, wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and thorns on the mountains. Being pricked by them, he becomes very aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger, and due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada explains, compares one family to high mountains. Becoming happy in their association is like a hungry man's endeavor to climb a mountain full of thorns. Almost 99.9% of the population is unhappy in family life. despite all the attempts being made to satisfy the family members. In the Western countries, due to the dissatisfaction of the family members, there is actually no family life. There are many cases of divorce, and out of dissatisfaction, the children leave the protection of their families. Especially in this age of Kali, family life is being reduced. And even during Prabhupada's time, or families were so strong that it was impossible for people in India to join due to the incredible full family attachment. Or as they say in Gujarat, no one will become a brahmachari. How could they when their family life is so sweet that there's even sugar in the dal? So how can we make any brahmacharis there? Here, that's what they say. But in Kali Yuga, all of that is being finished. Slowly, quickly. And then the children who grow up without parents, because they're without both parents, they're divorced. When they get married, they don't know how to be a parent, practically speaking. When I was growing up in my neighborhood, amongst people I knew, I never even heard of anyone who was divorced. It was completely unheard of. But now, and it, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I guess it was that long ago. 40 years, 45 years, 50 years. But oh, Kali has progressed so much. So much. The conditioned soul in the material forest is sometimes swallowed by a python. Can you imagine what it's like to be swallowed by a python? Eaten whole and then digested whole? What do you think about that one? Or crushed by the python. At such a time, he's left lying in the forest like a dead person, devoid of consciousness and knowledge. Sometimes other poisonous snakes bite him. Being blind to his consciousness, he falls into a dark well of hellish life with no hope of being rescued. This is sleep. Sometimes, in order to have a little insignificant sex enjoyment, one searches after debauched women. In this attempt, one is insulted and chastised by the women's kinsmen. This is like going to take honey from a beehive and being attacked by the bees. Sometimes after spending lots of money, one may acquire another woman for some extra sense enjoyment. Unfortunately, the object of sense enjoyment, the woman, is taken away or kidnapped by another devotee. Sometimes the living entity is busy counteracting the natural disturbances of freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, excessive rainfall, and so forth. When he is unable to do so, perhaps we can make it a little lower. When he's unable to do so, he becomes very unhappy. Sometimes he's cheated in business transactions one after another. In this way, by cheating, living entities create enmity amongst themselves. So much enmity. So this is all the bad news of material life. To encourage us so strongly not to enter the forest of fruit of consciousness, which will force us actually within the forest of fruit of actions, activities, which cause so much suffering. And we can't act. We can't not act. We can't refrain from acting. So this, of course, the solution to that is to act with great devotion for the pleasure of Krishna. Eleven purport. By cheating, living entities create enmity amongst themselves. And this happens so many times when, you know, the best friend takes your wife, your husband, your money, you're cheating here, cheating there. Over money, friendships are ruined terribly. over money, especially. This is an example of the struggle for existence, the attempt to counteract the onslaught of material nature. This creates enmity in society, and consequently society is filled with envious people. One person is envious of another, and this is the way of the material world. The Krishna consciousness movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy, which can only be accomplished when there's very deep satisfaction. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. Now that is a challenge. The Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society where there is no envy. Where there is no envy. What a challenge. How to do that? To give up envy of Krishna. That means everyone has to become a pure devotee, basically. That's what it would take to do that. What do you think? Not easy, yes? Not easy to do it for oneself, what to speak of, to have a whole. And what is the solution? This kind of hearing is very important. Very important, because the Bhagavatam instructs us and it purifies us, both. It instructs us on how, what we should do within our lives, what direction to take, but it purifies too. And it offers a taste on a different level. Oh, because when you start reading these kind of verses and purports, you start thinking of all the terrible things that go on in the world. Well, there's this new thing, we never heard of it, 10 years ago, but when people are driving their car in some city, major city of the world, and then someone forces their way in, carnapping type of things. Everyone knows about this? They do this? Did you know about this?
Sure.
Yeah, they do this all the time nowadays. You're driving down in some city, and people force their way into the car, put a gun to your head, and say, "Get out." But also, someone recently, there was another news thing I read that someone survived getting shot in the head from one of those. Just imagine what this world is like. People feel, I have my car, it's secure. Oh, where is the safety? Where is the security? Or an old iron loader or something. Yeah, it's a heavy place. So it's best to get out. This is the point. And then you think of Jad Bharat again, who was in also a terrible situation when they were going to sacrifice him to the goddess Kali. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants, something on that level. So detached. But to be detached, because we can't be attached at the same time. This is the problem. We all desire to be detached, but at least I'll say for myself, there's such a strong tendency towards attachment. And we want to be attached, but to be detached at the same time. On the forest path of material existence, sometimes a person is without wealth, and due to this he does not have a proper home, bed or sitting place, nor proper family enjoyment. He therefore goes to beg money from others, but when his desires are not fulfilled by begging, he wants to borrow or steal the property of others. Thus he's insulted in society. Due to monetary transactions, relationships become very strained and end in enmity. Sometimes the husband and wife walk on the path of material progress, and to maintain their relationship they work very hard. Sometimes due to scarcity of money or due to disease conditions, they're embarrassed and almost die So we'll read these two short purports and I think we end there. So this is the material world. And yet, quite amazingly, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Vishwapurna Sukhayate. It's a place of happiness. This is a matter of very deep Krishna consciousness. Yes. Especially if they vow, like he vowed, to never leave Vrindavan under any circumstances. We'll read these two short purports to 11 and 12. This is an example of struggle for existence, the attempt to counteract... Whoops. You read that one. 12. The principle of beg, borrow, or steal are very appropriate in this material world. When one is in want, he begs, borrows, or steals. If begging is unsuccessful, he borrows. If he cannot pay, he steals. And there's something like 90, or in Australia, 80 to 90% of all crimes are related to, does anyone know what? Drugs. People who have drug addictions, stealing. So this is so prominent in the West. People, when one sannyasi was in Perth and was staying right next door to the temple, and in broad daylight, people walked into the house, which was happened, the front door was unlocked, and went into the room where he wasn't in that room, and just picked up his computer, picked up this, picked up that, picked up his suitcase, in broad daylight, and just walked out. This is quite a good neighborhood. This is what it's like in Kali Yuga. Do you want to stay here? Beg, borrow, or steal. And when people have drug habits, they don't care for anything. One then becomes diseased or monetarily embarrassed. In the modern age, most countries... Oh, we forgot there. This is the law of material existence. He begs and he cannot pay, he steals. And when he's caught, he's insulted. This is the law of material existence. No one can live here very honestly. Therefore, by trickery, cheating, begging, borrowing, or stealing, one tries to satisfy his senses. Thus, no one in this material world is living peacefully. In this material world, there are many transactions between peoples and society, as well as between nations. But gradually, these end in enmity between the two parties. Similarly, in the marriage relationship, monetary transactions are sometimes overpowered by the dangerous conditions of material life. One then becomes diseased or monetarily embarrassed. In the modern age, most countries have developed economically, but due to business exchanges, relationships seem to be strained. Finally, wars are declared between nations. And that's the biggest business of all, the selling of the weapons. This is the biggest business in the world, selling of weapons, and the countries that sell to both sides, because they produce newer and newer, more deadly weapons, and they have to do something with their old weapons, so they sell those to both sides of the conflict, and then go in there and start some trouble, and boom, 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 then walk around, weapons for sale, anyone need weapons? This Kali Yuga is terrible. It's disgraceful. Therefore what? Leave it. But what's the thing that we can leave, that we really have to leave? The fruit of mentality. And somehow or another become... What did Jad Bharat say in the last chapter? Get established on that platform. How? And the next verse? In other words, become a servant to the Vaishnava. Which it hits exactly at the heart of the problem. That's why bhakti is so powerful, because it hits just at the heart of the problem of me thinking myself the master and the enjoyer. And therefore The solution is giving up the enjoying mentality and become the servant of someone who's pleasing Krishna. So I believe we're supposed to read up to 13, and we have indeed we have done that. Yes? Is that the correct verse to end at? Yep. 13. Thank you very much. Just, and again, he asked for the medicine that's going to cure him. And he doesn't immediately tell him, you know, the Ras Panchadhyaya, you know, the intimate pastimes of Krishna. He gives them this medicine, which is, it is quite bitter after all. He wants to give him Krishna, that the heart should be cleansed of specifically of the enjoying tendency, the central me, the central figure. That doesn't work in Vrindavan. He wants us to come to Vrindavan. He's trying to bring us to Vrindavan. But he knows that the heart has to be so clean with not a speck of selfish, self-centered self-interest. Okay, any questions or comments? And this is going to go on more and more. There, in the third canto, Kapila Muni had a section like this that makes renunciation take birth in the heart. Then in the fourth canto, Paranjana, and here in the fifth canto also. And the solution again is going to be the holy names. What do you mean Satyuga started?
I would say that we have a golden age.
No, it certainly doesn't look so. But at least 40 years ago, 100 years ago, the state of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, even in India, was not very good. Then, very much by the mercy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 50 years ago, the concept, the idea was spread very strongly, and there were many powerful, pure souls. And then, who could have imagined 50 years ago that there would be this many people chanting Hare Krishna all over the world. Remember that Prabhupada, when he was in 1966, there was one class and he was talking on the Bowery in New York to some people, and he said, "You'll never see a picture of Krishna as an old man." And then he asked, "Has anyone ever seen a picture of Krishna?" And no one had ever seen a picture of Krishna. No one had ever heard of Hare Krishna. There were no vegetarians practically, as I never met any divorced people amongst my friends. I also never met any person who was a vegetarian when I was growing up. It was just no one even ever heard of it. At least then. Now, it seems like something is going on. And there's so many people, even aside from ISKCON, even aside from the Gaudiya movement, there are so many people. The chanting of Hare Krishna has become so popular. It's just part of the New Agey yoga world. So there's something, some mercy of Mahaprabhu is really starting to move. That's what it seems to me. When we think, the way I think of it is that we don't, no one knows the plan of the Lord, how he's going to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. And our concept of it doesn't seem to be working, or good or bad or something like that, is 5, 10, 15, 20 years worth of time. We look and we make our decisions. But there is a huge plan. And if we had the ability to step back far enough and had a big enough time reference, even of the last 100 years, we could clearly see that something wonderful is happening. Now, how to make that manifest, we can't know more than what our part is, perhaps. So that's the question that I think devotees should ask themselves. What is my service? I can't, you know, I'm not a great, powerful soul, you know, like Prabhupada did something so significant for the whole world. You know, he actually changed the world. So I'm not going to be able to do that. So here I am, this little fellow sitting here, this little tiny fellow sitting here. But I should try to understand what my service is and what my part is in this whole scheme. It may be tiny. It is tiny. It can be nothing other than tiny, in fact. But let me at least do it with devotion as a servant to try to please Prabhupada and Mahaprabhu. When's she coming to Vrindavan?
Well, I hope it's
as long as they don't start killing Hare Krishnas and burning them at the stakes, that'll be okay. We'll love them. One little note also about, I could say that Jagatrini Mataji, her mother met Prabhupada, and now she's way over 85, and she is a Christian, but at this point she chants some rounds every day, and she once told me that when I met Prabhupada, I thought his words were too negative. But now I see that he was right. That's what she said. Very pious lady. So who knows?
Yes.
Sounds like they're targeting the people who grew up in the 60s. They have all the money now and they don't know what to do with their money. it's a different world. Yes. But suffering in and of itself won't make someone Krishna conscious. They need devotees to give them the holy name, who will boldly preach. Yes? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.